The Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
Buddy, kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
It's the Nick D Podcast.
All right. It is the Nick D Podcast. How are you, everybody? My name is Nick DiGilio, and I am your host. It's episode number 231 of the Nick D Podcast here at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, the best podcast network in the world. Check out RadioMisfits.com for all the great podcasts and our live streaming service, which is free. 24/7 live episodes of great podcasts, really cool music. It's free. It's awesome. It's exactly like radio, only better. RadioMisfits.live. Tune in. You can hear this podcast daily at 3 p.m. Central, and you can hear my other podcast, That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years, an SNL podcast, daily at 9 a.m. Central, among all the other incredible, varied, and entertaining, and informative, and cool, and funny, and scary, and dramatic, and awesome, great podcasts that are available at Radio Misfits. So check out RadioMisfits.live for our 24/7 streaming service. All right, it is episode number 231. It is Tuesday. I hope everybody had a lovely weekend, if you are indeed listening to this in a timely fashion. We hope you had a great weekend. I had a great weekend of eating. My girlfriend Julie and I did a lot of fantastic eating over the weekend. We went to, and it wasn't even planned, really. It just kind of happened. Like, during the week, we were going to go someplace, and we ended up eating we went to, like, three fantastic restaurants and had great meals. Yeah, it was fun, man. We had a fantastic time. We went to Rosebud on Rush on Friday night. We went to a trivia event with my girlfriend Julie. Her sister Kathleen goes to this yearly Near Easter event at Holy Name Cathedral. Downtown, and we ended up like having some dinner. It wasn't really planned. We were like, hey, we'll go to dinner. And we went to Rosebud on Rush, which I'd never been to before. I've walked past a million times over the years and years and years I've been in Chicago, but I've actually never eaten there before. Fantastic food. Great Italian food. So we had great food on Friday night, had some fun at the trivia. Didn't win, but we came in third. And then we went to this really pretty amazing place in Hyde Park on 53rd Street, called the Sit Down Cafe and Sushi Bar. A really interesting and fantastic and cool place. Someone was kind enough to get me a gift certificate for dinner, and it was for Christmas, and so it's been sitting around now for, like, you know, we've had this gift certificate for like 4 months, and, you know, there hasn't been a lot. I've had a lot of personal things in my life where I wasn't able to go out to dinner a lot, and lots of tense things happening in my personal life. And, you know, I've talked about it a little bit here on the podcast and on my social medias that there's an issue that my mom is dealing with, some dementia issues, and it's been kind of scary. And my dad was sick for a while, and dealing with that has been like really all encompassing in every possible way, from, you know, mentally to physically to health wise to money wise. It's just been a hectic bunch of months here, and it still continues to be challenging every single day. It doesn't go away. But anyway, we got this gift certificate, this place called the Sit Down Cafe and Sushi Bar, and it's on 53rd, and it's at 1312 East 53rd Street in Hyde Park. And it's fantastic, and it's weird because it's like this, you can get Italian stuff there. Like, they've got pizza, and they've got prosciutto rolls, and they've got all this kind of stuff, and then like really good sushi. And we went there, Julie and I went there on Saturday night and had a fantastic dinner. Like, it was fantastic. And the sushi is outstanding. And, you know, I guess there's not a lot of sushi places in Hyde Park. But, boy, this place was great. And the waiter, it was really cool. A waiter named Zach, at the end of our meal, when he was bringing us the check, was like, I don't want to be one of those guys, but I used to listen to you on the radio, and I'm a big fan. I listen to your podcast. And so it was really cool. And so he was a big fan. And it was just by coincidence that we got a gift certificate for this place. It was by coincidence that we went there that night. And by coincidence that Zach was our server, who was a big fan of my old radio show. And so they were very kind. The owner came out, Italian guy. How's he doing? It's so crazy and interesting. Like, he's brought in a bunch of Italian stuff on his menu. He's clearly from Italian descent, but yet he runs a sit-down cafe and sushi bar where you can get pizza. And I can't recommend it highly enough. We had a fantastic meal, and the dessert was good. Everything was great. So we went to the sit-down cafe and sushi bar. So that was really cool. And then we went to a place called State Line Pizza in Indiana. And it's in Indiana. And so we went to State Line Pizza. It's on the border of Indiana and Illinois, and we did that on Sunday. So we had great pizza on Sunday. We had great sushi on Saturday, and we had great Italian food on Friday. And it was all kind of like, it just kind of happened. We didn't plan it in advance. We were like, hey, we got a gift certificate or blah, blah, blah. So really great meals. We ate very well over the weekend. That was it was a lot of fun. And I got a new phone, but I'll tell you all about that when I'll save that for when I talk to Esmeralda. It was very traumatic. Getting a new phone is very traumatic, especially in my stupid, narrow mind. So anyway, so it was a fun weekend food-wise, and I hope everybody else had a great weekend. It's Tuesday, and every other Tuesday, we talk with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He also writes for The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we got a lot of TV to talk about. Every 2 weeks, we talk to him. And again, if you have any questions for television, about television or anything like that, Dan would be happy to answer them. You can leave them via voicemail at 773-417-6948, or you can email them to me at nickdpodcast@gmail.com. Any questions for our regular guests, including Dan, always just 773-417-6948 or nickdpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll take care of that for you. But Dan Feinberg is here. New TV, new seasons of Top Chef, new seasons of a bunch of new shows, streaming shows, all kinds of stuff. There's always a ton of TV to talk about, and nobody knows more about TV than Dan Feinberg, so we'll talk to him. And then the aforementioned Esmeralda Leon joins me in the third segment of each podcast, and we've got some more celebrities that people hate. We've got some other stories to talk about. I'll tell her all about my new phone. And we will also continue our taste test of sweets and candies and savory snacks from Ukraine because of Universal Yum. So, gonna eat some snacks, gonna talk about some other stuff, hang out with Dan Feinberg, talking TV, and much more. And that's all on this episode. And thank you so much for being a part of the episode. And if you want to, please subscribe and spread the word. Take the time to share and rate and review us on every platform. Again, call us. If you want to advertise, you can. A lot of people listen to this podcast. So if you want to sponsor the podcast or advertise it, you'll reach a lot of people. Drop us a note. Say, I want to advertise on the Nick D podcast. That's sales@radiomisfits.com, and we'll make that happen. My thanks to Jason Skaggs, who does all the sound and the noise and the weirdness, and to Ed and everybody else at Radio Misfits as we jump off and kick into episode number 231 of the Nick D podcast. And look who's here.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's show.
I know you do, baby.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's show.
Carrie's here. I'm here. Esmeralda's going to be here. And after I tell you congratulations, the great Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter is going to talk TV. But first, congratulations.
Congratulations. You're about to listen to the Nick D podcast. It's by far the best decision you've made today. It makes the other podcasts seem like crap. Oh yeah, don't be a jagoff.
Somewhere else, Dan Feinberg.
That's right. And that somewhere else is, of course, L.A., where Dan Feinberg is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He has a website himself and a page called The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Dan joins us every other week to talk TV, and there's always a lot of TV to talk about. And let's say hello to Dan Feinberg. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay. As you say, there's a lot of TV. For whatever reason, last week I didn't review that many things, but this week I've got like six or seven things lined up to review. So, you know, things are busy.
Cool. And we'll talk about some of those and then preview whatever is next for the next time we talk, because there's always a lot of TV. Now, you did write a lot of reviews of movies and docs and things like that, right? Connected to South by Southwest.
Exactly. It's sort of partially lending a hand to the team, and then partially these days most of the documentaries that show up at film festivals are either already pre-sold to some streamer or television network or the other, or are about to go in that direction. So might as well get them to me earlier. So I always lend a hand on various film festivals.
I think that's pretty great that that over the years I've noticed this, because obviously I've been covering movies and pop culture and TV and stuff like that for many, 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 many years. And over the past, 10 years or so, even maybe a little bit more, the access that we all have to really cool documentaries has gotten easier. We're seeing more really good documentaries that for many years would either not be seen or gone under the radar.
We definitely are. The part of the thing that causes me concern going along with that. So, okay, on the first and foremost level, it is absolutely for the best that all of these documentaries have a place to go now, which they maybe didn't 10 or 15 years ago. Right. I would say that the negative side to that is that not only do good documentaries have a place to go, but horrible documentaries do. And like, if you look at the weekly what movies people are watching on Netflix list, I can assure you with absolute candor that most viewers do not have the ability to distinguish. No, not the ability. The desire to distinguish between good and bad documentaries. They want whatever it is about the cult in wherever or the serial killer wherever. They will watch whatever those crappy things are. Yeah. And so often great things where you're like, yes, I'm so glad that got a distribution, they kind of slip through the cracks. So I try to make sure that some of them don't.
Well, really, before we jump into TV and talk about your podcast and some of the latest things, are there a couple of docs that you wanted to mention that maybe did stand out from the rest that you saw as part of South By that we'll probably see in the future? A couple of things that you wanted to mention?
I'm going to say that all things considered, it was sort of a middle brow range of documentaries. So, you know, in certain cases, like if you're a baseball fan, you will already be excited enough to know that there is a Roberto Clemente documentary coming up. And it's a solid, decent documentary. It's not a great documentary, but if you're the kind of person who cares, you probably already care. I enjoyed We Can Be Heroes a lot. It's a documentary about teens at a summer camp, a 1 week summer camp in upstate New York, many of whom are on the autism spectrum, are neurotypical, and they're not necessarily, especially in the aftermath of COVID and the pandemic isolation, not always finding their places in the world, but it's about this camp where they find their place, and for a week they play these elaborate fantasy LARPing campaigns. I found it really emotional, and I thought it did a lot of things very well that sometimes documentaries like this don't do. Like it let the kids be the stars of the documentary without putting their finger on the scale. So I really enjoyed that.
Is that going to be seen anywhere? Is that going to deal?
It will eventually get seen somewhere for sure. I don't think it has distribution yet, but I think it won some honorary prize at South By. Someone will put it on the air, whether it's a PBS independent lens or a Netflix. It's the kind of thing that gets out there.
We Can Be Heroes is what that's called. Cool.
Exactly. I also enjoyed, in a general sense, Movie Pass, Movie Crash. I think we touched on it briefly last time I saw it. It's just, you know, if you spent those couple of years using MoviePass and went through the roller coaster of the whole thing, it's a kind of fun trip back to all the way back to 7 years ago,
which feels like a lifetime.
Oh God, totally.
It's
insane. And it's also so interesting because they're talking about how the entire principle of MoviePass was that it was all about saving the theatrical experience and about getting people back into theaters. And the fact that they had this roller coaster right before 2020 killed part of the movie going experience. Like if someone were to come up with a good version of that today, all of the movie theater chains would be over the moon with the idea that someone wanted to change the theatrical experience and fix it. So instead, the experience was fixed before it was fully broken, but it was also fixed with this entire system that, as anyone who used it knows, was grounded in various levels of fraud. Yeah. and it's interesting. So I enjoyed that
and
one.
That's
that
HBO,
one is
gonna, right? That's HBO.
Yeah, that one is HBO, so that one is going to be easy to find. Okay. And then other things, like I think we talked about the Stormy Daniels documentary, which is already up on Peacock, and it's kind of garbage. But, you know, it's there. It's easy to find, so... Okay.
All right,
good
so We
it.
Can Be Heroes, which hasn't gotten a you know a deal or a distribution quite yet, and MoviePass, MovieCrash on HBO are quite good, and the Roberto Clemente documentary is solid as well.
Indeed.
Okay, great. Before we jump into TV and some of the other things that we wanted to touch on that you have reviewed recently or have seen recently, you have a fantastic podcast called TV's Top 5. You have a fantastic co-host, and you have fantastic episodes, and you have to fantastically tell us about it.
Well, now I can't live up to that. I'm gonna boringly tell you about my fantastic podcast
right now.
Great. And dedicated listeners surely already know that TV's Top 5 is the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast, and I host it with the great Leslie Goldberg, and that basically each week we go through the biggest news stories in television, breaking down the industry perspective, breaking down my own kind of whiny perspective, etc. I review countless television shows pretty much nonstop because they pretty much are nonstop. And then generally in a perfect world, we have a guest, usually a showrunner or someone associated with a cool show that we like talking about. So this past week we had Danai Gurira, who plays Michonne on The Walking Dead, but also wrote the episode from 2 weeks ago, which was
Wow.
Well, she is also a Tony-nominated playwright in her other time. But yes, she wrote the episode that was basically the Rick Michonne love story episode, the fourth of the season. And so she joined us to talk about putting on the writing hat for this particular project. And she's just great. She is so smart and so good and so talented. So it was a blast to have her. But anyway, that goes up on Fridays. That is TV's Top 5, the numeral 5, and it's wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, make sure you check that out. And that's wherever you get your podcast Fridays. And it is TV's Top 5. Great podcast. Just want to make sure that we reminded everybody that it exists and they should check it out. And you can always check out all of this stuff at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, thefineprint.com, and of course at HollywoodReporter.com as well. All right, let's get into some TV stuff. The Girls on the Bus is not, so this is not broadcasting on, I get so confused by these things. It's not broadcasting on HBO. It's just exclusively Max, so it's streaming on Max, correct?
That is correct. Okay. And because it's on Max, I believe the first couple episodes premiered at once, and then it's gone weekly. But also, anyone who watches it knows that it kind of has a feeling that is not really a Max feeling, so it's even more confusing because it really feels like an old WB or old CW kind of show.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, it was also developed briefly at Netflix, so it kind of has a non-branded feeling. And So The Girls on the Bus, it is created by Julie Plec, who is Vampire Diaries and other various things, and Amy Chozick, who is a journalist who wrote the 2018 book Chasing Hillary, which was about her experiences on the campaign bus, the Hillary Clinton campaign bus, in, I believe, the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. They created it together, and it's one of those things that makes you... set back and examine the way that things are developed in television and the stories that people get to tell versus don't, and who gets to just tell their stories and who has to have their stories televisionized, so to speak. Because you would think that there would be enough in a story about four female reporters on a campaign bus in an election season to drive things. And I think the version
That election. Jesus.
So of course it's not straight up the 2016 election. So there's no Hillary Clinton, there's no anyone else. But all of the political candidates are they're very, very clear versions of real people.
Like primary colors. It's kind of
I would say a little bit less direct. I mean, heaven knows primary colors is... primary colors is what primary colors is.
Right.
But like Scott Foley, for example, plays a character who is a small city mayor who no one thinks has a chance of becoming a political candidate.
Oh, wait a minute, because I didn't know Noel was in it.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's show.
Sorry, go ahead.
Indeed. Noel is indeed in it, and he's basically playing Mayor Pete. That is just what he is.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
there's also the establishment character who's in his 80s, who everyone worries that he's too old and doddering, and so there's that.
Does Larry David play him, or no?
No, he's played by some character actor who I don't exactly remember. Mark Consuelos plays a movie action hero who has decided to run for president for no particular reason. I guess he's probably more Arnold Schwarzenegger or maybe kind of. Jesse Ventura, but, you know. Anyway, so a lot of composites. And then the main roles, rather, are played by Melissa Benoist, who some people will know from Supergirl. Maybe if people watched Glee all the way through to the end, which I believe you did.
I know who she is.
So there you are. Yes, the always adorable Melissa Benoist, who does not get to sing on this show, which is just a mistake. How hard is it to stick in a karaoke scene just so that Melissa Benoist can sing? That's just silly. Along with the always wonderful Carla Gugino.
Although,
loves Carla Gugino.
What did I just see her in where she was the first time I've ever disliked her?
Oh, no.
What the hell did I just... It was a movie.
House of Usher?
No. It's a movie.
Okay.
Is she in Madam Web?
No, she is not in Madam Web.
Okay. She was in something, and she was terrible in it. And it was the first time I was like, what the hell is happening? And I don't remember what it was. I'll figure it out.
I just watched Madam Web 2 days ago. So,
oh, did you?
I have not seen Dune 2, but I
what?
Have seen
but you
Madam
have
Web.
Seen? Oh, my God. That we need to do something about that immediately.
Look, Madam Web was on pay-per-view. It cost
$5,
which was $5 more than it should have cost.
I will tell you this though. In terms of like movies that opened that week, it wasn't the worst movie that opened that week.
Oh God, I remember
the Bob Marley
this
movie was much worse.
Okay, yes, I did not remember what the other one was. Look, I feel like probably the second half of the movie had things that were amusing in it. The first half is so astoundingly badly conceived at every turn. Anyway, that has nothing at all to do with Girls on the Bus. I have gone far afield, because you can't remember where you disliked Carla Gugino, which must mean that there was no such thing.
Nope, I got it. I just looked it
Damn
up. Lisa Frankenstein. Lisa Frankenstein.
God, I hadn't even realized she was in Lisa Frankenstein.
Terrible movie, and she was terrible in it. So anyway.
What is she in it for?
I don't even remember. She's like the evil, she's the villain.
Really?
Yeah, she's like I guess the parent who wants to put the kids away. I don't even remember. I saw the movie once, but she's like she's an evil adult in it. You know, the teenagers are the good people and she's the evil adult. And she's really, it doesn't help that like the stuff that comes out of her mouth is awful and terrible. But it's the first time I went, I don't like, this has to be bad if I don't like Carla Gugino in it, so.
She must have gotten a decent paycheck, and she must have been like, Diablo Cody, why would I not want to do this? Still disheartening to hear.
But anyway. That's what it was. It was Lisa Frankenstein, so that's the point.
I think she's great in Girls on the Bus, or whether or not she's great in Girls on the Bus, Girls on the Bus benefits tremendously from her presence in it. And then there are a couple less known actors, Christina Elmore and Natasha Bainham, who play the other two girls on the bus. And when it's being sort of quiet and about girls who are friends and poppy girl power, feministy stuff, I think it's fairly likable. It's not the most strictly accurate piece of journalistic depiction or anything, but it does some things decently. And then for whatever reason, the only way that this could get made was that if there was also a vast political conspiracy built into it that the characters are dealing with, and that stuff is so awful. And so I kind of feel as if we're being honest, that a more male-centric story wouldn't have had to graft on this embarrassing contrived B story, and this was one of those, if you want to make this show, you have to give us a thriller hook kind of thing. And that to me makes me a little bit unhappy, because I don't think you should need something like that to tell a story like this. And So anyway, it's a show that I liked at times that made me roll my eyes an awful lot. And so it comes down to, as you're watching it, do you have enough affection for the people in it and for the moments that are sweet and funny to not be really, really annoyed by the parts that are really, really annoying? Because the really annoying parts are very much there.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I've just remembered now, as you were saying this, Carla Gugino plays the evil stepmother of the main character in Lisa Frankenstein. That's what it is.
If it's a paycheck, it's a paycheck. Yeah. I want Carla Gugino to be doing okay.
Yeah, I love her. I think she's great. And I literally was watching that movie going, man, even she's bad in this. So that's
okay. As of now, I have continued to believe that Lisa Frankenstein does not actually exist. And so I can continue to pretend that it doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, you're better off. You're better off not knowing of it exists.
At some point, though, I'm inevitably going to watch it because I assume it's fairly short. It has to be fairly short, right?
It's got to be like 89 minutes or something.
So okay.
It's bad.
That was the other thing about Madame Web is that it was almost exactly 2 hours, and that to me is madness.
Well, I mean, not compared to most Marvel movies, because most of them are, you know, I couldn't believe the last couple of Marvel movies, like the Captain Marvel's?
One was shorter.
Right? It was under two hours.
It was under 2 hours, but the multiverse, Ant-Man and Multiverse of Madness was Doctor Strange. That was endless. And the third Ant-Man movie was also totally endless. It was like 220 or something.
Yeah. I mean, they're all like that. I mean, Jesus. Anyway. All right. But now the book that it's based on, I don't know if you have you read the book that
I have not read the book, but I believe it's just a memoir. I believe it's journalism. That is what Amy Chozick primarily is.
So it's more directly and realistically connected to Hillary's campaign for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. No, the book is about Amy Chozick on the campaign trail, and it's a direct homage to The Boys on the Bus and to just all of the great campaign reportage books that have been written over the years, and the TV show has to become this somewhat silly, fictionalized thing that, again, I found enough likable things about it that I had no problems making it through the 8 or 10 episodes that I watched, however many they are. Right. But I completely understand anyone who watches like 15 or 20 minutes and is like, oh, God, this is too contrived. I can't watch.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
All right. It's Girls on the Bus. There you go. All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about a couple of things on Apple. Palm Royale, which I have not watched yet, and two episodes are already up, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds right.
And I briefly talked to you. You weren't a fan of the first episode. I don't know if you've seen. How many have you seen so far?
I have now watched. I watched 5, and I'm now done.
That's not good. Okay, so tell everybody, because this is something that I was. I mean, the cast is. Well, you explain what it is. And I still haven't watched any of it yet. I'm kind of saving it so that I can watch it with my girlfriend together. But now if it's as bad as you say it is, maybe we'll just skip it and continue watching The Regime together. Yeah. I got to tell you something, Dan. I'm enjoying the hell out of that show.
Still?
Yes. Yes. The last night was the Hugh Grant episode.
It was, and which I did enjoy the most of any of them.
Yeah.
So.
I like it, man. I don't know. But anyway, so that's another thing we can talk about in a little bit. But I'm enjoying the hell out of The Regime.
Look, you're definitely not alone. The variation in reviews for The Regime, where my review was right in the middle. My review, Metacritic said my review was a 60, which sounds about right. I think that I believe most of my reviews end up being roughly a 60.
Is that right? I don't know. Yeah, okay.
I think that's my average, and I think that's what Metacritic kind of views my sensibility as. I like this concept. But
right.
is sort of the way that Metacritic views almost all of my reviews.
Other people seem to enjoy it besides me.
There were definitely a handful of people who really liked it, and definitely a handful of people who really hated it. So I just end up sort of right in the middle on that.
I can see either way. You know what I mean? I can see why people would hate it. I totally can understand that. But I'm really digging it. I'm having a great time watching it.
And the truth is that I think Palm Royale is like that also.
Oh, okay. All right, so Palm Royale, tell everybody about it. It's Apple.
And
a couple of episodes are now available. But man, what a cast. And you know how I feel about these ladies, a lot of the women that are in it, a lot of the guys that are in it, and you know how my dedication to SNL. So I'm kind of like very excited about this.
So, okay, well, but not excited enough to watch it immediately last week, Nick.
Yeah, no, it was one of these deals where, again, it's one of these things now, you know, I have to, all, you know, now I'm in a relationship, so it's like, do we watch it to get, you know, it's that kind of thing. You know what I'm talking
about. I don't
about.
Know, man. Apple TV's ratings don't know what you're waiting for. It only knows that you're waiting. So,
all right,
so,
I'm sorry,
don't,
Apple.
So don't
sorry,
wait
Apple
too
TV.
Long.
No, we won't. We'll get to it. We honestly,
you cannot trust the streaming rating system to know your psychology, so or to tell the truth if you've been watching or not watching. So
right.
it's all lies.
All right, it's all lies. So you'll explain what this is, and I think listeners will understand why I'm excited about it when you talk about who the cast, who's in this thing.
So, okay, so let's just go with the cast. The right. cast is Kristen Wiig, Ricky Martin, Josh Lucas, Leslie Bibb, Laura Dern, Allison Janney, all sorts of random people who you really loved on sitcoms in the 80s, including Julia Duffy and Mindy Cohn. Has anyone seen Mindy Cohn yeah. lately? If you yeah. watch Palm Royale, you'll see Mindy Cohn.
Yeah.
Bruce Dern, for the first time, Laura Dern and Bruce Dern working together. So,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's yeah. probably worth that's, the price of admission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I read
itself.
That, I almost flipped my lid when I was like, what? Anyway.
Indeed. So, they had yeah. they had never acted before together, but now they have
yeah.
in Palm Royale. And so the premise is that Kristen Wiig plays an outsider who moves to Palm Beach. And, oh, wait, I didn't even mention the best part of the cast, because the best part of the cast is Carol Burnett.
Right.
Why did I not mention
yeah.
Carol
oh my
Burnett?
God, yes.
Gee
yes.
whiz. Carol Burnett. Good gracious, y'all. See, that's what
wow,
happens
of all the
this
cast members to forget. Man, oh man. Okay.
I have no idea why. And Cindy Crawford's hot daughter who was in The Bottoms. So
oh, right. Yes.
All sorts of people who
yeah.
are.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Anyway, so Kristen Wiig plays Maxine, an outsider who moves to Palm Beach. She wants to become a Palm Beach socialite, and so she attempts to scam her way into an exclusive Palm Beach tennis, golf, country club mm-hmm. Thing. Lots of lying. She attempts to weasel her way into their power structure, but the women who already have the power, including the aforementioned Allison Janney and Leslie Bibb, are not so eager to share. There's a lot of fraud. There's a lot of sleeping around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is, it's created by Abe Sylvia. It's apparently based on a book. It's apparently based on the book Mr. and Mrs. American Pie. I have no idea if it's similar or not. Mm-hmm. It's just, look, the easiest way for me to put it is that the volume on every performance is turned probably to 11 or 12
yeah.
for every single second of it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no quiet moment. There is no human moment. There is no point at which any character says or does anything that feels recognizable in a human way. But boy, oh boy, are they all acting really, really hard. It's in the sort of comic soap opera vein of things like Desperate Housewives is the obvious best example of it, or
yeah.
most successful example, but also broadcast television has done at least 50 attempts to mine a similar vein unsuccessfully. It's probably a lot more like most of those. You know, so it feels like kind of everybody is playing a Saturday Night Live character, and definitely it feels like Kristen Wiig is playing a Saturday yeah. Night Live character. Carol Burnett has a lot to do here. This is not just a Carol Burnett in a guest starring role, and she has more to do as the show goes along, especially since she's in a coma as the show starts, so not so much you can do there.
Right.
But she's great, and, you know, unqualified, I will say that Carol Burnett is great. Whether or not she's a reason to watch, she could be. I don't begrudge that. And a lot of these people are people who I like seeing do things. And
yeah.
I always like Leslie Bibb. I think she's been
yeah.
so underrated for 20 years. And yeah. I think she's conceptually great, just not a good character. Allison Janney is always great
yep.
in everything. Very annoying character. Laura Dern comes the closest to having a quote-unquote human character as such things go, and so she's decent. I think people will know even faster than Girls on the Bus. I said, if you watch the first 10 or 15 minutes and it's too contrived or silly for you, check it out. Similarly, if you watch the first 10 or 15 minutes of Palm Royale and it really annoys you, it will not get less annoying.
I gotcha.
But I watched the first episode before press tour, probably would not have watched any more other than the whole professional responsibility thing. So I wanted to be able to talk about it on last week's podcast. And so I did watch four more, and I kept waiting for either the tone to calm down a little bit or for something in the stakes of the series to find any kind of meaning for me at all. The truth is there was no way that this show was going to be aimed directly at me. This is definitely a show that is aimed at several demographics that I am not a part of, which is, God bless. What am I supposed to say? I did not laugh. I don't think a single time in five episodes, but
wow.
If you watch 5 or 10 minutes and you find yourself laughing immediately, that just means that the sensibility is working for you and it was not working for me.
Okay. All right. Palm Royale. Yeah. And I get from the commercials and the bits that I've seen, it does seem, like what you said was everybody is at 11. That's kind of clear in the trailers.
It is hella broad. And also because it is an hour long show, that makes it even more exhausting. It's not an hour show where episodes are 60 minutes, but it's definitely an hour show where episodes are 48 to 52 minutes.
With commercials an hour.
It's exhausting.
Okay. All right. Palm Royale. Now, you were telling me to Apple really wants me to get on that. Now after I hear your review, I'm like, well, maybe I'll put that one off again.
Look, you are a bigger fan of some of these people than I am, and also you will know if you're finding it amusing. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Okay. And also on Apple, Manhunt is another one that you didn't necessarily review on the fine print, but we want to talk about that. So tell everybody about Manhunt.
Indeed. And this is another one that seems to be getting slightly polarized responses. It's based on a best-selling book by James Swanson, and the book is about the 12-day manhunt for John Wilkes Booth after John Wilkes Booth assassinates Abraham Lincoln. And the series has opened things up so that it's partially about Edwin Stanton, who was Secretary of War at the time, played by Tobias Menzies from Outlander and The Crown and other things, doing his kind of 1860s detective thing, trying to track down John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth, who's played by Anthony Boyle, who some people might know, speaking from, again, Apple TV's Masters of the Air, the World War II
Austin
drama.
Austin Butler thing, yeah.
The Austin Butler thing or the Barry Keoghan thing
or
whatever it is. Lots and lots of people in that show.
Yeah.
But it's also been expanded so that the story is also about the impact that Abraham Lincoln's death had on efforts for Reconstruction after the Civil War. And so there's a lot of just watching President Andrew Johnson at work and seeing the compromises that started being made immediately, and if you have the historical context to know exactly how wrong and in how many different ways wrong Reconstruction went, and all of the different ways that the things that went wrong in Reconstruction, how they informed basically the next 160 years of American history in these horrible and direct ways, I found all of the history and the attempts to make connections through the history to be fascinating. And I thought a lot of the performances were very good. Tobias Menzies is very good. Anthony Boyle is very good. Hamish Linklater plays Abraham Lincoln, and I've already gotten into several debates with people as to whether or not he's good or not, because we all have these conceptions of what Abraham Lincoln is supposed to feel like, despite the fact that no one actually has a recording of Abraham Lincoln saying or doing anything. And so there's a lot of free play. And Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously, if Daniel Day-Lewis plays Abraham Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln retrospectively becomes Daniel Day-Lewis.
I go right to Bradford Dillman. That's
We all have our own versions.
If I remember correctly, he was in The Lincoln Conspiracy, which was one of those movies from, this is from my childhood, Dan, the Sun Classic Film Company, where they would release these historically inaccurate, ridiculous movies like In Search of Noah's Ark and like Beyond and Back. And they were kind of pseudo-documentary reenactment pieces of crap that were made for like no budget, and where they would take like kind of a real thing, like people dying and floating, you know, like on their on the operating table, and they float over their body and like Beyond and Back. And then the In Search of Noah's Ark was when they found what they thought was like a piece of Noah's Ark, and they did a whole movie on that. And The Lincoln Conspiracy was a movie about conspiracy behind Lincoln or whatever, you know, the assassination or whatever. And if I'm not mistaken, Bradford Dillman played him in The Lincoln Conspiracy. So I thought I would
That is such a random thing to remember,
I know,
Nick.
I know. But Sun Classic Pictures, they were huge. When I was a kid, they were like, oh, you know, this was the movie. Oh, let's take the kids to this. It's like they're going to learn something, even though they were completely historically inaccurate. And the budgets were like $1.50 and beards were falling off of people. Like, I'm pretty sure Bradford Dillman's beard fell off while he was on his horse, if I'm not mistaken. But it was that kind of shit. But they made a lot of, like, money in the 70s. Because parents were high and they were like, let's just take the kids to see this crap and it'll be fine and they'll learn something about Noah. So that's basically what but I just remember Bradford Dillman in The Lincoln Conspiracy. So
And see, here I expected you to say that your true Lincoln was Robert Barron in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, see, he's great. Yes. And I do love that one, but I went right to Sun Classic Pictures because I literally remember as a child, because I remember as a kid, like people my age going to see those movies and really liking them, and me going, they're crap. What the hell is wrong with you? You know, and I'm like, I'm 11, and I knew that Beyond and Back was shit. So, well, my friends were like, it was cool. People died and they came back. I'm like, no, they didn't. It was just really bad. So anyway. All right, so Bradford Dillman, he's my favorite Lincoln. Let's move on. So back to Manhunt.
So Hamish Linklater plays Abraham Lincoln in this, and I thought he was pretty decent, except for the fact that you just can't, you know, playing Abraham Lincoln is a complicated thing to do. Yeah. Lily Taylor plays Mary Todd Lincoln, and I tend to like Lily Taylor.
What's not to love, you know?
It is a true story. And then a bunch of other random people pop up. Patton Oswalt pops up.
Yeah.
Matt Walsh from Veep and other various things, not to be confused with conservative commentator Matt Walsh, pops up. Lots of good people, and I liked it. I thought what it was doing was interesting. Some people who I've talked to who read the book wish that it had been more of a straightforward thriller because their feeling was that that's what the book was, and that because of all of the additional attempts to historicize things, some of the thriller aspects got lost. And this is one of those cases where I didn't read the book. As listeners know, I tend to read the books. In this particular case, I did not. But I enjoyed Manhunt. I watched all 7 episodes of it and found it at times gripping, but mostly interesting throughout. So,
are all the episodes available? Or
I don't think so. I think that let's see how many episodes appear to be available. It appears that as of this week, there will be 4 available.
Okay.
It looks like it was the first 2 came out, and then the third one came out last week. So,
okay, so it's four are available now, and that's 7 episodes total, and they're hour
each.
Yeah,
they are hour ish.
Okay, all right, and then Palm Royale is what, 10 episodes?
It's either 8 or 10, but it might feel like 20 or 30. And I've also been led to believe that it sets things up for future seasons.
Oh,
so,
boy. Okay. I just find it really interesting that it's a 7 episode show about Lincoln, but a 10 episode show about, you know, Kristen Wiig in a private resort.
Priorities, man. Priorities.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Well, Bradford Dillman passed away, so you can't only do 7 episodes without people saying, "Hey,
Have you been looking up Bradford Dillman
been
talking?
No, I have to say this. You want a quick story? Very, very quick story and aside. years and years ago, I was with a theater company here in Chicago called the Factory Theater, and one of the actresses that came in to do a show was named Brooke Dillman, and I ended up working with her and directing her in shows and acting with her. And she's one of the funniest women that I've ever worked with in my life. And I think she's one of the funniest humans on the planet. And she has gone, she moved out to LA. And she has gone on to do, she played a nun weather person on a TV show that lasted about a season. Maybe you'd know what that is, but she was like a nun weather person. She was also on a couple of other TV. She was on Stranded on TBS.
I do remember that one.
Okay, she's on that. She played a teacher in Superbad and was Emma Stone and Jonah Hill's teacher in Superbad, and has a really funny scene with Jonah Hill in Superbad. And she's, you know, been in a couple of other things here and there, but deserves to be seen more because she's one of the funniest women, literally one of the funniest women on the planet, and I think she's extraordinarily talented, and you can't tell. And she also does a lot of voice work. So she's in cartoons, and she does, you know, a lot of voice work because she's got a great voice. But anyway, her name is Brooke Dillman. And so I'm being a smartass one night when we're rehearsing a show or something, and I'm like, yeah, Brooke Dillman, just like, hey, are you friends with Bradford? You know, I'm making a joke. My idiot friends who are my age are all laughing because it's Bradford Dillman, and he was in Bug and all the Dirty Harry movies and all this other shit. And I love Bradford. I truly love Bradford Dillman. And I'm like, yeah, Bradford Dillman's the best. And she goes, that's my father-in-law. And I went, what? So she's married to Bradford Dillman's son, and then started telling me about how she spends Christmases with Bradford Dillman. And I was like, what? So in the years that I knew Brooke, and then she was in town, I was doing theater with her, she would always like bring me like stuff signed by Bradford Dillman. But oddly, I never got an 8x10 of him as Lincoln. I'm thinking about that.
So I have several things to say about that. First, you had to tell me that Bradford Dillman was the star of Bug, because that at least would have been a reference that I could have gotten for Bradford Dillman.
That's him. Yes. That's okay. Him. And you know, he's also in three Dirty Harry movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he was the top billed star of Bug,
yes,
which
of Bug,
definitely
absolutely. Yeah.
Was one movie that traumatized me as a child.
okay, so that's sure. Bradford Dillman, yes.
Okay, and the other thing is that Brooke Dillman, sister Brenda Trogman in NBC's Good Morning Miami.
That's
so,
it. That's
so
it.
There you are.
Yeah, and that was like about 6 months after she moved to L.A., or about maybe 6-8 months after she moved to L.A., and she landed that, and I was like, oh, cool, and then that was, you know. But she's brutally underused. Like, she's more talented than the TV stuff that she's done indicates. Like, she's brilliantly funny. But anyway, that was my personal connection. I was being a smartass during rehearsal. I'm like, yeah, but do you know Bradford Dillman? And she goes, yeah, it's my father-in-law. I was like, what? So anyway.
I mean, seems not wholly unreasonable, I would say.
Yeah.
Sure.
So anyway, there's my personal connection to star of Lincoln Conspiracy, Bradford Dillman.
Who has nothing at all to do with Apple TV Plus's Manhunt, that's now exactly available right. on that's Apple right. TV.
All right. Gerard Carmichael has a reality show, and I've been seeing the commercials because I've been enjoying The Regime, and I've been watching Curb, and I've been watching John Oliver. Boy, his last episode about student loans, I know people very personally who were losing their mind over that, because they're still, like 25 years later, paying off their student loans. And that episode of John Oliver was unbelievable.
He mostly tends to do good work. I didn't love the episode before that, the Boeing episode, which was definitely more timely. Yeah. But I had seen whatever the documentary was that was like a year and a half ago. Right. And that's always the thing with John Oliver, is that, you know, it's not as if he has a staff of dogged reporters. They rely heavily on news reports and documentaries and things like that. It just happened that one to me was basically the exact same thing as the Netflix Boeing documentary.
It's true. But still, I think we're lucky to have John Oliver.
Oh, God, of course.
The best. But yeah, so I've been watching a lot of HBO. So I've been seeing commercials for the Gerard Carmichael reality show. And that's what it's called, Gerard Carmichael reality show, right?
That is what it's called, and it's a somewhat misleading title because people think reality TV as opposed to it's really a docuseries about Gerard Carmichael's reality. So
I gotcha.
It's a sophisticated play on words.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so that premieres Friday night in the 11 o'clock This Is Weird Shit slot that HBO has.
Yeah. So 10 o'clock Central. For people
exactly. Good, about. Thank you.
But now can you review it? Can you talk about it? Are you cool?
I can.
The embargo
lifts either tomorrow morning or this morning, depending on whether people know when we're recording this.
So Tuesday then. Okay,
exactly.
Today. All right. Let's just say
the embargo
today.
Lifts great. On Tuesday. So
well, let's hear about it.
It is. It is fascinating, and it is going to annoy the hell out of some people, and it's going to be yet another. I think that's going to be the theme of this week's reviews, is you will know within 5 or 10 minutes if you're amused
okay,
by the thing that's happening.
Happening. Okay. All right.
Because I really like Gerard Carmichael. I loved Rathaniel, but before that, I loved The Carmichael Show on NBC. I've liked him as a stand-up. I think
he's him in Poor Things. I like him in everything.
Some people really hated that performance in Poor Things.
Oh, well,
I think he was doing exactly what Yorgos wanted him to be doing.
That's
and
exactly right.
I think nobody in a Yorgos movie is doing anything other than what Yorgos wants them to do. So
that's probably true.
So if,
if
so, if
do
you don't
well,
like him,
they do it well. They do. They win Oscars. That's
heaven knows. So yeah, so basically the premise is it picks up after Rathaniel, in which he famously came out as gay and talked about his family and how they handled it and talked about how he was handling this push in his own life for additional truth.
Yeah.
And this is an extension of that. This is him saying, if there's a camera on me all the time, maybe I won't lie, maybe I won't cheat on my the people I'm dating, etc. Well, the truth is, with a camera running on him, he still continues to lie, still continues to cheat on his boyfriend, and it follows him along as he's basically coming to terms with what his new life is. And so, you know, he has to confront his parents, because talking about how his family handled him coming out was an important part of Rathaniel, an important part of his SNL monologue, etc. So,
right.
So it's there's a lot of confrontation. There's a lot of self-confrontation. There's a lot of confrontation of friends and loved ones. But more than anything, I don't know that I've ever seen a unscripted show that was executive produced and created by the focus of the show that lets that person look as bad as Gerard Carmichael looks in this show.
Oh.
He comes across as such a narcissist, as a liar, as a pathological cheat, etc. And that's obviously what he wanted to do. So it's half comedy, half reality TV, and half therapy session. And it's very uncomfortable to watch. And it's very much invested in exploring the idea of why we take documentary series like this to be true, how the elements of contrivance and artifice that we don't pay attention to, like the idea that all of these extremely intimate conversations are happening with cameras rolling. So the cameras are much more present in this than in a lot of shows. And so there's a huge crew that was following him. And you often see the cameraman pointing the cameras at each of them and following the reactions that are very squirmy. I thought intellectually, I thought this was a really smart and savvy show, made me laugh a little, definitely made me cringe a little. Yeah. But there's no question that if you are uncomfortable with a person who lots of people like as much as Gerard Carmichael looking as bad as he looks here, you probably won't like it. And you also, if you think that it's not intentional or that he's not aware of how bad he looks, you probably won't like it. I think that's going to be a reaction from some people, is that, wow, he's really awful, and I can't believe that. Well, no, part of what he's doing this for is because he wants to acknowledge these flaws about himself, but boy, oh boy, does it play up the flaws about Gerard Carmichael. And I found that interesting.
That sounds great to me. I'd be all over that. I'm definitely going to watch it. No question about it. Are we in an era now where, like, like deeply sort of like uncomfortable television, I mean, with this and The Curse, and even like Beef to a certain extent, but this is kind of a reality thing, you know, like it's real. But we've always had cringe TV, we've always had television that makes us kind of uncomfortable, but it seems to be a thing now.
I think it's definitely a thing now, and I think obviously Curb has a lot to do with it, and then The Office had a lot to do with it, and a lot of the semi-improvised comedies that followed in those shows' footsteps had a lot to do with it. I think this is probably more beholden to the Nathan Fielder school of cringy documentary TV, and so it's fitting that it's going into the How To with John Wilson slot.
Yeah.
And I think that probably it has a similar tone to it. I think what's going to throw people off is that Gerard Carmichael really has made his living as being this very, very amiable kind of everyman type actor. And this is him tearing to shreds whatever the nice guy Gerard Carmichael image was.
Yeah.
And I think some people will find that uncomfortable and unpleasant as opposed to uncomfortable and intriguing. I found it uncomfortable and intriguing.
Gotcha. Boy, I am so excited about this one now. And I was excited about it before, but now I'm really excited to watch it.
I will be curious, but you cannot let it wait for four or five weeks.
This one, by the way, will be one that I will watch. This one will probably be too much uncomfortable stuff for my better half. So I'll probably end up watching this one on my own. Because she's not real good with like the cringy stuff. She's like, why do I want to watch? She'll probably not want to watch something unpleasant. So.
Lots of cringing and lots of, God, I can't believe all of those people signed waivers to appear on this show. I can't believe that Gerard Carmichael actually sat in an editing room for this show and said, yeah, sure, put that in. I find that amazing.
My girlfriend has worked on docs. She is a documentary filmmaker. Probably from that point of view, she'll probably find it interesting. But then like at some point, she's just going to go, yeah, no.
I would be curious to see how she responds because it is very much about documentary filmmaking.
I'm sure she'll watch it, but it's not going to be like appointment TV. Okay. Before we get you out of here, season premiere of Top Chef season 21 happened located in our neighbors to the north, in Wisconsin. I thought the first episode was great. I loved it. I think the chef testants are great, and I think the right guy went home. I immediately making fun of Tom's hats. I'm like, get out of here. You can't do that. But I really liked it. I'm not crazy about like the fact that they didn't have the, when they change rules from Top Chef, I get a little bit, angry. the whole like, immunity thing. I'm like, what? You know, where they're kind of messing around with the immunity and they didn't have a quick fire on the first episode. But again, it's like the granddaddy of competition reality shows. And I love it. And I love everything about it. And I think Kristen, how do you think Kristen did? I thought she was great.
Oh, I thought she was super. I thought she was, I think she's going to get better is the other thing.
Yeah.
Like I definitely, there were some points at which it did not feel like she was completely sure what she was supposed to be doing in the, you know, kind of how she was supposed to be standing. And there were parts where you could see her inexperience, but I thought when she was actually talking to the contestants, when she was judging their food, when she was doing the things she has to do to be the host, I thought she was great. And if people haven't watched her Nat Geo show or her Disney Plus show, I guess that's where it's findable now.
I
thought it was wonderful. It's four episodes. It's like restaurants at the end of the universe or end of the world. But if you look under Kristen Kitsch, you will
it's
find
also,
it.
It's also she's also on a really hilarious show called Fast Foodies with two other, one MasterChef chef and another Top Chef winner. And they take fast food items that celebrities bring in, and then they recreate them or make a high-end dish out of them as well. That's a very entertaining and funny show, and she's great on that too.
Yeah, I think she was such an obvious replacement for Padma, and so totally right. We'll see how the immunity thing does or doesn't play out. For the first episode, I was fine, and I thought that the three-pronged challenge was a good one. And I really liked the, okay, go make a meal in 20 minutes with the leftovers. I thought that was a good idea for elimination.
Are there any chefs that stand out for? I know it's early. It's all, the new chefs are here. The new chefs have arrived, you know. Has anybody just in the first, now, do you see these ahead of time or you watch them live?
No, I watch these live. I watch these on Peacock so I don't have to deal with commercials.
I understand. I DVR them on the Bravo so anyway, but is there anybody that stands out? Are there any, after the first episode, are there people that you might like or people
the person who went home was the one who needed to go home and he was really annoying. And there was a lot of concentration on that. Whereas otherwise, it was a lot of, I like these people mostly, and they seem to be making good food. It was the one guy who was a problem, which was similarly the case with the first episode of Survivor this season, is that the person who was eliminated in the first episode of Survivor hogged so much of the camera time and was so clearly the worst person in the history of the world. And I was just so relieved when they got to go home.
And that's another thing, though, that I say at least about Top Chef is like, in a lot of these, like a Gordon Ramsay or Fox produced show, that guy would stick around for 10 more episodes because of the drama. But like for me, Top Chef, I find it like genuinely about the talent and the food. And there are have been times when obviously Marcel in the past, you know, oh, they're going to cut his hair. There's been drama, but that's not what Top Chef is about. That's why I love it so much. They do stay in the same quarters, but it's not about who took this and, you know, like who's living this and blah, blah, blah. And it's not about yelling. It's about showing the talent that you have as a chef. And that's the focus. It's not drama. And so this guy with the hat, when he started making jokes, I'm like, oh, shit, this guy. And then he was gone by the end of the episode. So I was like, okay, good. That guy's
and I think you're and I think the point you made there is exactly the correct point, because I think the first few seasons Top Chef kind of did over lean into personalities, and so there was Marcel and the whole situation around Marcel, which was just so awful, and I felt like in those first couple seasons, every season there was one wacky ass molecular gastronomy I'm an eccentric genius whatever who was only there to cause trouble, and he was making these almost inedible meals, and people were like, this is intriguing, we'll keep you and eliminate this other person. Subsequently, at this point also they're getting such a high level of chefs. That was without the thing question. With the episode starting with Kristen Kish asking people, you know, how many James Beard winners, how many Michelin stars. Yeah. And then I thought she did a great job when she said, it's all fine and well that you can do that, but when I came in, I'd had three jobs, and I was a saucier or something.
Yeah, a sous chef.
You know,
I was a sous chef, exactly.
A sous chef,
No, I love that too. I loved it too. But I will say this, it's a little weird to hear somebody else saying, pack your knives and go.
It is, and that is reflective of how great Padma was, and Padma is not replaceable, but on the other hand, if they had to, they absolutely replaced her with someone who I like watching in the same capacity.
Me too. I think we agree on everything so far, and I agree with you that I kind of like, I think Manny's really cool, and I'm glad he won. And I also loved his response was, there's another immunity. Don't, you know, when they're like, don't rest on you.
Yes.
And he's like, there's another immunity on the table. I'm like, damn, this guy. All right, cool. And I liked a lot of the people. And we got three people from Chicago in there. Well, two that work in Chicago and one that's from Chicago who's working in Milwaukee, but he's from Chicago. So.
No, I thought it was, it seemed like a good group of people. I think it will be interesting to see how they use the Wisconsin setting. And like, I'm kind of amazed that the first episode wasn't cheese based. I don't know how they.
Well, listen, I think there's going to be enough beer and cheese for the next for this entire season that we'll be like, this was nice to start on something else, you know.
But I feel like usually in cities they start off with the elephant in the room and they're like, okay, this we have to get this thing out of the way off of our tables. Like I guess the international one, I feel like they did fish and chips within the first two episodes just to get it off of their plate, and
so
we'll see if this week goes with the
cheese. Yeah. Cheese and beer will be the next one. Yeah. Okay.
Here are some cheese curds. Make me something and whatever.
Well, I thought the first episode was great. I thought Kristen did a great job. As always, Colicchio and Gail Simmons are fantastic. I love the show very much, and I'm excited about this season because the chefs look like they're going to be fun to watch. So I love that show very much, and I'm happy it's back.
Right there with you.
All right. So what are we looking forward to reading on the Fine Print or at the Hollywood Reporter? What are you going to be seeing and reviewing soon before you join us in a couple of weeks?
Well, by the time this is up, my review of Drod Carmichael reality show will be up. If people go and check in the days to come, on Wednesday, my review of the Colin Farrell Apple TV show Sugar, which is a mystery show with a twist, which I can't say anything more about. That'll be up. My review of A Gentleman in Moscow with Ewan McGregor and Mary Elizabeth Winstead will be up. And then towards the end of the week, and I still need to get to it, my review of the Morgan Neville documentary about Steve Martin will be up. I have not watched it, but I'm looking forward.
I got a screener of it. I watched it.
Can you tell me pro or con?
It's 60-60. Uh-oh. I'm giving it one of yours. One of yours. It's a 60. And we can discuss it. After you see it, we can discuss it.
Cool.
But I got a screener of it, so I did watch it because I'm going to review it as a movie next week. I'm reviewing it on Friday's episode with my buddies Eric and Steve. But yeah, we'll talk about it. But I'm mid on it. I'm mid.
Okay. I will be watching in the next day or two.
Cool. You let me know. Text me. Let me know what you think.
Will do.
All right, Dan. Thanks, buddy.
Till the next time.
There you go. That's Dan Feinberg, and he's the best. You know who else is the best? Esmeralda.
Yeah. Esmeralda Leon. Yeah. Esma. I'm talking about that Esma. Esmeralda Leon. Yeah. Esmeralda. Yeah, yeah. Esmeralda Leon. Love me some asthma, Esmeralda Leon, yeah, Esmeralda.
All right. Esmeralda. Esmeralda Leon. She's here. It's time to talk to Esmeralda, as you can tell by the music. Hi, Esmeralda.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. Been a little crazy, but okay, getting by. It is a Tuesday, which means we just had a weekend. Did you do anything memorable? Did you watch any Top Chef, as we've established in the past?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just on all the time
it's on
now.
I don't blame you.
It's the thing I go to because I'm like, oh, that's comfortable. And then I'm just doing whatever on the phone or just around the house.
Yeah, I'm the same way, but it's with the Game Show Network. Or buzzer. Mm. Like, that's my comfort thing. Like, whatever's going on, if I'm working on something or trying to figure something out or doing a little work on the computer or the phone or whatever, it's kind of like, I can leave buzzer on and watch, you know, Password Plus from 1978, and I'm good with that.
Right.
You don't have to think about
it. Yeah, they
it.
Just it's had, like, they just had the, I think it was this weekend. Yeah, they had the Top Chef Chicago episodes on.
Oh, man, yeah.
So it was just funny to go back because I think at the time I wasn't really at least as familiar.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It just didn't seem like I was able to recognize anything, and now I was seeing things. Also, it just cracked me up because the episode I did see, they had Richard Roper on. And it was just funny because they're like, oh, famous Richard Roper. I was like, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that was when he was, you know, like that was back when Roper had, I guess he was best known as, you know, like when he became Ebert's sidekick after Gene passed. It took him like a year and a half to find a replacement, and they replaced him with Ebert, or they replaced him with Roper. And Roper, you know, obviously here, he had a couple of radio shows. He worked with Ro Khan. He was on, you know, a couple of other radio shows. And he was known locally as a columnist here. But he did get national exposure because of, you know, because of the Ebert thing. But, yeah, that is pretty funny. I see Roper all the time. I see him regularly at screenings and stuff.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ask him how many Instagram followers he has? So stupid.
I stay away from that kind of stuff, Esmeralda. I'm in trouble enough with people as it is. I try to stay away from that kind of stuff. But no, it's funny, you know, that it's also really, really funny now, you know, to watch the Top Chef Chicago because, you know, this is long before Stephanie Izer had Girl and the Goat and stuff. And to see her, you know, I mean, that was, what was that, like 15 years ago probably?
It was early, I want to say early 2000s.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's that long ago. And you know, to see how far she's come and how many restaurants she has and how much of a big deal she is internationally and that, you know, Girl and the Goat is there. And it's interesting. It's like Richard Blaise, by the way, who's also on that season.
Yeah, he's very much a media food guy now. See him on every damn TV show.
Yeah, and he's a regular. He's one of the judges on Next Level Chef with Gordon Ramsay, which is on Fox, which is a, you know, a crazy cooking competition show. And he's all over the place on that. And on the season, the Top Chef season, I think he was mostly known for his hair, if I'm not mistaken. Like there was a, and he was always freezing shit and doing smoke and stuff. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like he was doing all that sort of like scientific-y tech cooking, you know, where it's all about plating, you know, and I froze the gravy. Like get the fuck, you know, like I have gravy crystals will be served on the site. So get out of here. But that was like his thing. You know, he was like, you know, so you're watching, but it's interesting to see people, you know, not just contestants, but like, you know, other people, like, you know, Padma's not on the show anymore. And by the way, I watched episode one of this new season. Kristen did a great job. Mm-hmm. She did a great job. I had no doubt in my mind, but she really did a great job and she kind of made it her own. And the first episode was fantastic. And, you know, the new season takes place in Wisconsin, in and around Wisconsin. They start in Milwaukee. That's the home base. So it's a lot of Midwest people on it. And two chefs, three chefs from Chicago, one that doesn't work here anymore, but two that do. And then one from Milwaukee. And so there are a lot of Midwest people that are represented. And the first episode was fantastic. It was great, as always. But Kristen did a great job. And it was weird hearing somebody else, please pack your knives and go. It was weird hearing somebody else other than Padma saying that, you know? And, you know, standing in the kitchen when the chefs come in, you know, on their daily, for their daily, for their quick fire. And it's not, Padma's not there. And it's like, Kristen is there. It's kind of weird. But you get used to it. But yeah, but watching those old episodes, especially Chicago, it's interesting to watch. And didn't they, if I'm not mistaken, you didn't see that. You only watched one specific episode. But if I'm not mistaken, the very first episode where all the chefs are introduced to, you know, the audience and introduced to each other, they did it at Uno, if I'm not mistaken. They did it at Pizzeria Uno.
Okay.
I'm almost positive that's where they all met, like in the basement, you know, the downstairs Pizzeria Uno. So if I'm remembering correctly, that's where everybody meets. Because I remember there was a chef there who was she was gay, and Blaze was like, had the hots for her, and she's like, yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree, money. If I remember correctly, I don't remember who the other chef was, but I remember Blaze was like, you know, had his hair all poofed up, and he was trying to be slick, and she's like, yeah, that's not gonna, it's not gonna work. I'm sorry, buddy. So. But yeah, and then, you know, seeing Stephanie on there, and Antonia is another one. She was one of the finalists.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah.
So, but it's fun to go back and look at those. That's why, like, you know, I still haven't, like, I discovered the Top Chef channel. I really haven't. I've been like kind of crazy and busy, and I don't stay in my apartment on the weekends. I go to my girlfriend's, so I don't have, you know, I haven't been able to watch a lot of it. But I got to get back into it and start watching the old ones. But yeah, Chicago, Top Chef Chicago. So. Anyway, so we got that 24-hour Top Chef channel. Boy, I'll tell you, that's just a gift from above, right there. Do they go straight through an entire season? Like is it just like back to back to back to back full seasons, and then they'll do like special shows, or do they mix it up?
They just mix it up.
Oh, they do.
I mean, I'm not sure what
the schedule is.
What their logic is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, that's kind of interesting that they're. Well, I mean, and again, you know, that show's been on for 20 years, over 20 years, so there's enough material to do an entire channel. And all the offshoots, as you said, like Top Chef Suites and blah blah blah, and Top Chef, you know, International, and they've got all that stuff. So yeah, you can do a whole channel on that stuff. So, but anyway, we are a little bit later on going to taste some snacks. We're going to do a snack from Ukraine, thanks to Universal Yums. Mm-hmm. This is in the Yum Bag, because they give a Yum Bag, which has a couple of smaller candies that they put in, they seal it into a Yum Bag. So we're going to try one of those a little bit later on. And so there you go. How many, over the years, Esmeralda, how many new phones have you gotten, if you can recall? Because, I mean, I was very, very late to the game with smartphones and phones in general. So I didn't have as many. But can you estimate how many phones you've had since? Do you remember when you first got your phone? Like, you got a phone?
I was given a phone probably in 99.
Wow.
Or 2000.
Wow, right there on the edge.
Right, but it was never used.
Okay, it was like an emergency.
Who the hell am I calling? Yeah, there's no one to call. At that time, you had to pay per phone call.
That's right. Yeah, the plans were a little different then. The data plans were just a wee bit different then. Yeah. Now, was it a flippy? Did you have like a flippy thing with a? Did you pull
it
up
had
the,
a flip,
the full up the antenna?
It had a flip on. Yeah, it had a flip thing on. Like part of it.
Any of the phones that you've had in the past, like, is that still around? Like, have you kept it? Have you kept any of your old phones? Do you have like a bag?
No,
of old
I send them off to recycle.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That's what you should do. Okay. So 1999, you got your first flippy phone, but you know, because obviously data plans were completely different, and it was very expensive to use one. You just kind of had it in case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then you moved on a little bit. When was, do you remember like the next phone you got? When did you move from flippy to something else?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Probably 2002, maybe three. Yeah. It's, I've never been that attached to my phones, honestly. I mean, I use them up until they completely die on me and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't usually, like, I've never had an iPhone. I could care less for iPhone.
Right.
So I'm just always been Android.
Yeah, me too.
Because they're cheaper. They're cheaper too.
Me too.
I'm not paying so much money for a name.
I got you. I'm with you 100%. It's funny because, like, I think we've talked about this just a few months back, that movie Blackberry, which was about the, you know, the creation and the rise and the fall of the Blackberry. And it had, what's his name, Glenn Howerton? Yeah, from Sunny.
Yeah.
As the, you know, the relentless, crazy, bald boss who yells a lot. And I remember watching that movie, seeing that movie at the Music Box last year. And going, wow, people, I remember Blackberries. And I remember people were very upset. People were very upset when they did the screen phone so you couldn't clickety-click. You know? Like,
yeah, I didn't like those just because I was worried that the screen would poop out. And then you couldn't, it would be unusable. But I guess that's not really a problem.
It isn't a problem. Well, it's not a problem. Now, although there are shattered screens, I've seen people walking around with shattered screens all the time.
They still work.
They still work.
Amazing.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite phone? I know you're not like attached. The phone that you currently have, do you enjoy it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. So it's not like you're not one of these people like, man, I got to have the newest phone. I got it. Cause you're not one of those.
No.
Yeah.
No. The phone I have right now, there is, I think, at least 4 or 5 updated versions. Mm-hmm. Of it from when I got the phone, so
yeah
my phone is obsolete in the scheme of the brand that I bought.
Right. I gotcha. I understand. Now what about Colin? Is he up on the new phones, or is he like you? Does he like, all right, whatever, as long as it works?
No, he's the same way.
As long as it works, as long as I can do what I need to do with my phone, then I'm cool with it.
Yeah
The reason I asked is because I got a new phone, and and I had to. I literally had to, because like my phone, and I'm not exaggerating. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I know maybe, I don't know. We don't see each other very often in the flesh. We talk all the time, you know? But I don't know if the last time, you know, we were together or anything, I pulled out my cell phone, like if we were at Zany's or something. It was literally as well held together by scotch tape. I'm not,
oh wow.
I'm not kidding. The back and the front split apart.
Yeah. It's amazing that you were able to use it.
And I used it for, it split apart like last year. And I've been using it for almost a year with it like split. And then the back cracked. What's funny is like mine cracked and split in the back, not the front. Like the screen was fine. Mm-hmm. Like the screen did not crack, but the back did. And it separated from the front so I could see inside all the mechanisms and the wires and shit. So I just would hold it together and then put scotch tape around it to keep it together.
Hey, if it still works, I mean,
and it worked. It
used
worked
it up until it was done.
Literally until it was like, at one point, Julie was like, Nick, come on, man. You know, like I'd pull it out and it would be lopsided because there'd be tape on one side of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the idea. You know me. I'm like, I'm not one for change. I mean, you know that. I think you know that. Like, I'm like, if something is going fine and going the way it should be going, if I've got something that works, why the fuck would I change that? And if I'm comfortable with it, I don't like being uncomfortable. I don't like change. So, like, my first cell phone, the first cell phone that I got, I didn't get a cell phone until 2008, I think. And it wasn't a smartphone. So I got one of those, you know, it was just a cell phone. And everybody at that point, by 2007, people had smartphones already. I mean, they weren't as unbelievable as they are now, because they are unbelievable. I mean, you're walking around with a computer, basically. You know what I mean? In your pocket, and you can do anything on it.
Yeah.
Which I'm stating the obvious, but at that time, however less impressive they were, but there were a lot of smartphones available, and I didn't go the smartphone route. I did like flip phone with clickety clickety, you know? And that was I didn't get a smartphone till 2013 or 2014 was my first smartphone. And since then, I've only had 3 smartphones total, including the new one I just got. So I don't know. But I will say this, though. It's a lot different now getting... Well, so when was the last time you got a phone?
Had to be 2019, 18, somewhere
okay.
around there.
Okay, so before, a little bit before, like maybe a year before COVID and shit like that hit.
Yeah.
And that's the phone that you have now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what was the process for you? Do you remember going in and saying, I want to get a phone? And so you brought in, because your other phone, I mean, you worked, like you said, you like me, you just, you worked with it until it couldn't work anymore, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So where did you do, what did you go to, like a Verizon, are you Verizon, or if you don't want to say
that? It was T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
I went to T-Mobile.
So you went to a T-Mobile store, and you were like, hey, and then... So you picked out the phone that
I knew the type I wanted. They mm-hmm. had so they acquired the brand because I had asked a friend of mine who was much more technologically savvy, and I asked him like, what is one of the better brands that I could buy? And it was this brand called OnePlus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just bought it outright. And then that phone lasted me for a while. And then I noticed that T-Mobile had that brand now. Because before I just bought it and then had
I see.
The plan.
I gotcha. Okay.
But then T-Mobile had it, so then I went through them and I bought what fairly new version at the time,
right?
Of that brand.
And that's what you stay with. That's the brand you like, mm-hmm. and that's what you stay with. Okay.
Yeah.
And the process of like cleaning out your old phone and pumping it into the new phone, I find that fascinating because I've only experienced it one
Is
other
that-
time.
Is that really a thing anymore?
Well,
I mean, everything's attached to Google. It all just populate.
But the thing is, like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, I know people, like, when Julie got a new phone just recently, I think it was probably about 5 months ago or something, or 3-4 months ago or something like that. She did it at home. Like, the phone, she bought it. They mailed it to her. I think she bought it.
Yeah, they now, I mean, at least the one I have, I was able to, they have some kind of sensor and you just put them together and they
it's like a you
translate over the info.
Yeah, you put like a SIM card in and then you got the cords, you put the cords into each phone and then you hit a thing and boom, they transfer all of your stuff from your old phone to your new phone.
Oh, mine just it literally you just touched them together.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wow, that's the future. Wow. Wow. Holy cow.
Yes. You can turn on you can have light with a switch, Nick.
Oh my god.
That's amazing.
What the holy shit. Wow. Wow.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell and I love
Hi.
Nick's show.
Hi, Carrie Russell. Oh, she's got a shirt that says "Get with it, Nick." Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right.
Hi, I'm Carrie
All
Russell
right.
and I
social
love
commentary
Nick's
and everything with
yeah,
her
she
shirt.
Knows. She's aware. She's aware of everything that's going on. Did you get your phone in?
Erwin.
No, I'm sorry. I was just like passing that sound effect and I just wanted to play it. any chance to play, you know, this.
Erwin.
And I'll take it. So anyway, all right. So you just tapped the phones together and they transferred. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I, as I've said, I put it off as long as I possibly could. I mean, the back mm-hmm. of my phone was completely cracked. It was separating completely. It was held together by scotch tape. I would tape, you know, the case. I would tape the case over it so that it wouldn't fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't fall.
Yeah, so it would hold everything together.
And it still worked. I was able to post everything I needed to post on my socials and, you know, do stuff online. I was able to do everything. And I liked my phone. I liked it very much. And as a creature of habit and as someone who is like... you know, not good with technology and intimidated by it, I kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And then finally, I could not wait anymore. Or Julie wouldn't put up with it anymore. And she's like, we're going to the fucking
yeah.
Verizon store. You're getting a new phone. Quit being an idiot. You know what I mean? So she got a new phone and then was like, look, I'll give you my old phone. And mm-hmm. her old phone is roughly 3 years old. So that's the phone she gave me. And it's a Google phone. So it's an actual phone made by Google. And it was very, it's like, she is like, I think her new phone is also a Google phone. It's the same phone, only it's the updated, the newer version with more bells and whistles.
Right.
You know
yeah.
how it goes. She's like, here. And she cleaned it out, said, here, it's all empty. Take it. It's free. So you don't have to buy a phone. we just take it to your, you know, to your service, and they'll transfer all your shit over. And then I was like, yeah, but I want the same backdrop, and I want the same this, and I want the same that. She said, just like, shut up. Okay, just.
No, they're just pictures, Nick.
I know, but I freak out.
How did you get it on there in the first place?
I know. I don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, I don't know how to do what. And then I got to change passwords, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. So I was like, oh, fuck. So I was like,
it's
okay.
It's a hard life, Nick.
I know. And I don't let it. But, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure you know this about me. But when something is, I like it, I just want it to stay that way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want shit to change. Like, I'm not good with technology. And I know that it, like, technology moves on by the minute. And I know that, you know? By the time we're done with this conversation, Esmeralda, 27 new phones will be updated in the world. You know,
right?
And I'm not unaware of the fact that technology moves forward and I'm staying back. I just don't like change, and and it takes someone like, you know, Julie. Like if I weren't in a relationship with Julie right now, I'd put more money into Scotch tape than I would into a new phone.
Like, I got this really good Scotch tape now.
I got the Scotch tape that's known specifically, they advertise specifically, it holds cell phones together. That's why.
Yeah.
So we went into Verizon, Julie's like, hey, let's go for a drive. Let's go, because she lives on the south side. And so he's like, let's go to Indiana and get you a phone. I'm like, oh, all right. So I got it in Hammond, Indiana. I didn't get the phone.
Okay.
I mean, but we did the transfer and all this stuff in Hammond because we were just driving around. And there's a pizza place called State Line Pizza, which is literally across the street is Illinois and on the other side is Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this legendary old school pizza place. And we were like, well, let's go there and then you can get your phone all powered up, your new phone. I'm like, all right. And by the way, the pizza at this place was great. Really, really great. And it's on the Indiana side. But it's on the Indiana side. Like, you literally can order a pizza, pick it up, and then bring it back from Indiana to Illinois in 10 steps. But it's called, I think it's called State Line Pizza, State Line Pizza. And it was fantastic, and it was really good pizza. And that's the big reason why we went, but we went to the phone place first. So the guy came in, and clearly, Esmeralda, like, he's seen it all. Like, I walk in with the Scotch tape on the phone. If you take the Scotch tape off, the phone literally, the back and the front split apart like a mouth. Like, you know?
Right.
And it's dusty and you can see wires. It's insane that it's still, like, Julie was like, how the fuck is this thing still working? You know? But this guy was so nonplussed. You know, he works at Verizon. He's like, whatever, man. You know?
Yeah.
He looks at it, he's like, yeah. And he grabs it and he's pulling the Scotch tape off and it's splitting apart. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, I'm panicking. You know? And he's like, whatever, man. Don't worry about it. You know? I mean, like, these tech guys are just so, you know what I mean, right? Like, these tech guys are like, shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're thinking. Just let me do my job, you know?
Yeah.
So he hooks it up and then starts presses some stuff. He puts a SIM card in, I guess, and does it. And then they hook up the two things. They do the thing and he presses the button. And then slowly every app and everything I held, all my pictures, all this, all the stuff that I've, you know, all that stuff gets transferred slowly into the new phone. And then, incredibly, like, I look at it, and it only took a couple of minutes because I didn't have a lot of stuff. Like, he said, you got nothing on your phone, man. Don't worry about it. You know? Do you remember? Do you remember the sketch that they used to do when Jimmy Fallon was on called Nick Burns, your company's computer guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he'd be move! Yeah, exactly. That was hilarious. That was back when Jimmy Fallon was funny, when he was on SNL 20 years ago. He was funny.
Right.
but that, you're like, move, you know, when he'd come in and, like, nobody could do their computer, so they call your IT guy, and it was always this, and he was a dork, played by Jimmy Fallon. He had glasses, and he had, like, a bad sort of, you know, cheesy John Waters mustache, although John Waters mustache is cool. I mean, like, a cheesy, bad, like, I can't grow a mustache, you know.
Yeah.
And he would make fun of people who didn't know how to work their, if I remember correctly, almost every sketch, it was an iMac. That was the you know, the computer that came with the handle, and those were called iMacs, right? Yeah, because I had one when I was back in the late 90s. So that's how long ago the sketch was. But those guys are the guys that work at Verizon. That's the modern version of the Nick Burns. You know what I mean? Like, you walk in, they're like, oh, shut the fuck up and just let me do it. You know, move. I mean, it's that guy. It's that guy, you know? And those are the guys now. The Nick Burns are now working at cell phone stores. Just, like, just shut up and let me do my job and it'll be fine, you know?
There you go. That or the Geek Squad, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all like Nick Burns guys. They're all born of that character. So anyway, he hooked it up, and then he transferred everything, and this is all kind of like, and I'm worried about it. And the next thing I know, like, I look at the phone, and it's got my Magnolia backdrop, you know? And I was like, oh, okay. And I was happy about that. And then I kind of like, and then ultimately, it literally 45 minutes, I was like, oh, okay. This is just like my other phone, except there's no fucking scotch tape holding it together.
Right, it's not cracked in 7 places.
Yeah, and there are things that I have to do differently in order to get online or do this, and it's powered by Google and all that stuff. So it's a different process that I have to get used to, and I'm still getting used to it. But I just panicked for nothing, and I put it off for fucking months because that's, you know, I'm an idiot. But now it's just like, I mean, people walk in, they walk in, walk out. You know, like, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And you don't have to buy a phone. Like, I didn't buy a phone. I walked in. The guy said, here's a SIM card. We'll clip blah, 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 blah. And that was it. And I left. So anyway, I guess this is news to no one.
And it's, pretty much.
It's not pretty stressful. Much. And it's not stressful and difficult to get a new phone if you have a phone already. So that's what I learned over the weekend, yep. Esmeralda. I learned all about that. But it still is kind of a pain in the ass if you have... You know, not a pain in the ass, but it's, you know, it takes a little bit to learn your new phone. You know, that's something that I think everybody has to go through. If you do get a new phone, it's like, oh,
right.
Because you're so used to going through what you went through. Because it's by rote. Because you use your phone every day, thousands of times a day, you know?
Yeah.
But you're happy with the phone that you have? You're good with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. A good phone.
Okay. All right, and you're not a geek about it, so you're not worried about the next, you know, the next one.
No, no.
Do you have any friends? Do you have any friends that are tech? Like you said, besides, how about the one that you called up to say, hey, you know, the tech.
Oh, I haven't talked to that person in a very long time.
Okay. Do you have any friends, immediate friends or relatives who are like, oh, you know, you got to get this new phone. Oh my God, I got to get this new phone. Are people like on the cusp of technology in your world?
Not really. I mean, I've known people in the past, but I don't really, I haven't seen them or talked to them in a while. Right. So, yeah,
I can understand why. So anyway, all right. Well, that was the big event over the weekend was me getting a new phone and I thought it was going to be traumatic and horrible. And I was putting it off, you know, over and over and over again. And then, and finally, you know, the brains of the outfit, which is my girlfriend of the two of us, she's the one who's got the fucking brains, was like, look, dipshit, we're going. And that's it. So anyway, I have a new phone and it's still kind of weird. Like the phone, you know, like the process of taking pictures is different and, you know, and the way the pictures are stored, it looks different. And I'm like, ah! When I first looked at it, but now I'm like, okay, well, you know, you got to change. So, but once I get used to something, once I get used to something, I'm cool with it. You know, I'm good with it, but it's just that I'm really, really hesitant and really, really stubborn about change. And then once I do it, I'm fine. But I'm just a jagoff when it comes to that kind of shit.
Right.
So, but I do have this new phone, and I'm looking at it right now, and I like it very much. And it's very, very, very similar. It works very, very, very similar to the one that I had, only it's a little bit better and a little bit cooler. So anyway,
Nice.
So that's the big news. You know, if it were up to me, though, we'd all have rotary dial and answering machines with cassettes.
There you go.
Did you have like an answering machine or anything?
Not myself. No. Yeah. I mean, we have one at my parents' house. I mean, they still do. So.
They still do. That's awesome. Did they change the message or has it been the same for years?
No, it's been the same. So my dad does, he did carpet installation. So that was kind of the business line.
Right. And so people, oh, it was a business line. So the people would call in and say, hey, I need some carpet installed. And they would call.
Right.
Okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I watch The Batman, and I watch it semi-regularly because I think it's the best Batman movie ever. And that's the one that Matt Reeves made with Robert Pattinson and, you know, Paul Dano and Zoe Kravitz and Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I love that movie. Love that movie. It's my favorite Batman movie ever. But ever since we had a conversation about, you know, because I knew what your dad did. We've talked about it over the years, what your dad did.
Yeah.
But then, like, I remember when I was watching The Batman and then eventually talking to you about it, one of the first episodes of this podcast, because when I first started this podcast, The Batman had just come out. or it was just coming out or something. And there's a scene, I don't know if you remember. You've seen it, the Batman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Do you remember when they go to, like, the Riddler's, like, lair, and they find, like, he used it as a weapon to knock out the mayor, to kill the mayor? One of those metal carpet press things?
Oh, you know, yeah.
You know that tool?
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, like, when we were talking about the movie, you were like, yeah, my dad... You mentioned, I guess your dad or something, your dad like watched the movie or something. I don't remember, but there was a connection and you were like, that's a tool that my dad would have around all the time. And yeah. I always associate, every time I watch the movie and I see the scene where they bring it up, I think of you and your dad. Like every single time. Like they pull, and they tear the carpet up too. And he's got the thing and he tears up the carpet. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, well, it's perfect. I mean, it's for putting the carpet in. To
right.
Get it into the,
right. I know.
Into
but
the
I just,
nails,
that,
but yeah.
That's just it, that in my head, like when I see the Batman, I think of your dad. I'm not kidding. Like, because I know that what your dad did for a living and, you know, and that was like a tool. And it became a point of conversation between the two of us because of that Batman movie. So every time I see Batman on cable, I'm like, oh, there's the tool that Esmeralda's dad uses. So, anyway. But yeah, so, all right, new technology. So it's not as traumatic. I'm a wuss when it comes to that kind of stuff. That's all. That's basically it. So anyway. All right. So we have more. We have to at some point finish the. Well, we like to talk about celebrities. It's fun to talk about celebrities. And over the past few episodes, we've been talking about this article that is. It's not us saying this, but it's celebrities that people hate. And that's not. Those aren't our words.
Yeah.
Those are the article's words. So you ready for the next one here that we can kind of talk about? Because a lot of these, Esmeralda, you and I have found are. There's no reason to hate them. Some of them are like, yeah, they're annoying. Whatever.
Right.
But, you know.
There's no one that's, like, truly, like, ugh.
Like, despicable. Right. So, because we were talking about Ashton Kutcher and Jennifer Aniston on the last episode. And I did not know this, but they were rumored to have dated. Because they were in a movie together.
Oh, yeah?
I don't remember the movie, but they were in a movie together. Because I was, like, after we recorded the podcast, I was, like, looking around on my old phone. Mm-hmm. I was looking at my screen through the gauze of tape, you know, and I saw that at one point I was just looking at one. I didn't pursue it, you know. I didn't dive in like it was a, you know, in a history project or anything. But I guess at one point it was rumored that they dated, so that was another reason why they were annoying, because they dated at one time and people didn't know. Or I didn't know that. Did you hear about that? Did you ever know that Ashton Kutcher and Jennifer?
No, it's news to me.
So the next one in this article is Justin Bieber. And I can see that. I can see that. I find Bieber,
yeah.
I find him extraordinarily annoying. Now, do you have any opinion on Bieber? Like even little Bieber to adult Bieber? Any?
I mean, he's kind of jumped out of the limelight a little bit, but.
Yeah. He's married
really,
now,
you
right?
Know, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think people were more annoyed. Well, so he had a bit of a reputation or whatever amongst the teenagers, because he would, like, there was this whole drama of him dating different, like, essentially Disney Channel
right.
actresses and things
right.
like that. Like, he right. dated Selena Gomez.
Right.
I think he had dated, I forget her name. She's that blonde. Another Disney Channel person.
Okay.
But there was like a whole thing all about that. So maybe that could be why people mm-hmm. are annoyed by him. I think
yeah.
people are just annoyed by teenage heartthrob
mm-hmm. people. In general, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he seemed really annoying to me. And also, like, you know, the fans were kind of annoying, like with the Bieber. Mm-hmm. What they have Bieber fever. What were they called? Bieber fever is what they had. I don't remember what the names were, because like, what are the Swifties, right? The Taylor Swift fans are Swifties.
Yeah.
Who are much less annoying than the Bieber fans were, as far as I'm concerned. And Taylor Swift is much less annoying than. I don't know why, in my opinion, that Taylor Swift, I don't find Taylor Swift annoying, but I found Justin Bieber annoying. I don't know why that is. I'm not sure why. But, like, people
I think,
who...
People,
yeah.
I mean, for me, the Taylor Swift fans are are a little bit annoying. I mean, I don't really delve into those worlds that much, they're a bit much because they literally, that woman can do no wrong
in their eyes.
And
it's
like,
true.
She's got some problems, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there. I mean, any kind of weird super fandom is kind of crazy anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Where the person that they are a fan of can do no wrong and they can walk on water. Anytime you take that kind of fandom that far, it's always screwy. But for some reason,
it's a lot of right now she's dating that guy from the Kansas City Chiefs they're buying his.
I know.
His jersey and all that. It's like, okay, whatever.
Travis Kelce and then of course, for some reason, then the right wing media got onto it and said it was a conspiracy that, you know, she and Biden were in cahoots to fix the Super Bowl so that she and Kelce, I almost said Kelce Grammer, Travis Kelce. It would be funny. It would be much funnier if she were dating Kelce Grammer. Wouldn't that be hilarious if she
would be quite interesting.
But I mean, all this conspiracy. But again, you know, a lot of people have a lot of time on their hands. And again, social media, you know, when you have that much time.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
No sense at all.
But okay.
But
sure.
For some reason, because I like Taylor Swift, you know, like I think she does stuff that's annoying that every celebrity does. And, you know, the whole like football thing, whatever. But it got people to watch football. I don't know what the fuck. The NFL should have been happy about it. You know,
right? The NFL is fine with it, I'm sure.
Yeah, are you kidding
They're
me?
Making their money.
And did you see the ratings for the Super Bowl? It's like the highest rated Super Bowl in years, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that Taylor Swift was involved in football the entire year. You know,
for
so
sure.
Fuck, man, don't be bitching. All the advertisers should shut the fuck up. You know, like shut up. You know, but I don't think Bieber ever did anything like that. And the other thing that made me mad was Bieber when in that stretch when the Hawks won 3 cups in 6 years when they won the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. Bieber, who, if I'm not mistaken, is Canadian. Am I wrong on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so he's obviously Canadian, which makes him a hockey fan. Cause by law, if you're Canadian, you must like hockey. Like that's like, I think you go to prison in Canada, if you don't like hockey.
Right.
So he's a hockey fan. And when the Hawks won the cup, the year they won the cup, or it was like the new season and they had just, you know, they just won the cup. He went back and he was taking pictures in the locker room, like of himself, like with the cup or, you know, like with the players and stuff. And, you know, you're not supposed to stand on the logo, like of the Hawks. Like you're not supposed to stand on the head dressing logo of the Hawks. It's like forbidden. And you're not supposed to do that like in any, you're not really supposed to do that. In hockey, you're not supposed to do that. Like in hockey, like stand on the logo or whatever, like in, you know. But it's especially like there's a rule for it in Hawks Nation where you're not supposed to step on the logo.
But it's on the ground, on the floor.
It's on the floor in the locker room, but you're not supposed to step on it. And people who go
there's
in there.
There's nothing on it that tells you to not step on it.
Right. But again, Bieber is supposedly a hockey fan, and hockey fans know this. And he was like, and that pissed off hockey fans. Like I didn't, you know, like I saw it, I was like, oh, you're not supposed to stand on that. But hockey fans went nuts. Like when he was standing on it, I was like, oh, he made a mistake. He was standing on it and he took a picture and he was standing on the thing and people, and then made a big deal out of it in the hockey news, you know, and him being Canadian, I guess, if I remember correctly, like it's like unheard of to do that. So he should have known better, quote unquote. But I remember that being a big deal. That's how stupid it was. Like people made like a big deal out of that. Like motherfucker stood on the logo of the Hawks. You're not supposed to do that. But in addition to that, yes. And the whole, you know, Selena Gomez thing. I remember that being like a soap opera thing.
And
at that time, that's when he was going through like the breakup or when it was all over the news and the Bieber fever was at its height. That's when he hosted SNL. And I just did an entire episode. I recorded an entire episode about a sketch that got cut after dress rehearsal when Bieber hosted. And I had interviews from Hader and the writers about what a dick Bieber was.
There you go.
An interview on Andy Cohen's show, What Happens, what's it called? What Happens Live or What Happens, whatever that show is. You know what I'm talking about. The show that Andy Cohen hosts. And Jay Farrow and Bill Hader were the guests. And someone called in and said, who was the most annoying host of all time? And they both, without hesitation, went, Justin Bieber. Like immediately.
Wow.
So.
Well, there you go then.
Yeah. And so the Bieber fever thing. So Justin Bieber is on this list of most hated celebrities, and I guess that that cast from that that particular episode would agree. So I guess he was a real dick.
Yeah.
And all the stories. So anyway. But yeah, and then like, you know, and then he kept, you know, like, but I will say this in connection with SNL, how fucking hilarious is Kate McKinnon's impression of Justin Bieber?
Oh yeah. No, it's it's oddly spot on.
It's totally spot on and absolutely hilarious. But
it's
yeah.
one of those things where you now just think of her doing that
exactly.
rather than actually Justin Bieber.
Right, right. And one of your favorite things ever. Don't most people, you know, like, and I know that you love it because when you were fine, kind enough. By the way, you were fantastic on my SNL podcast. It was so much fun having you as a guest.
Oh, thank you.
And people love that episode. And by the way, if you want to listen to that episode, it's archived. And if you don't know, I have an SNL podcast. It's all about Saturday Night Live. It's called That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years. And Esmeralda was a fantastic guest. We had a great time. And a fantastic guest, meaning that all the sketches you picked, I also love. So that's always fun.
Right.
But you talk about, like you were talking about how now people think of Bieber as Kate McKinnon doing Bieber.
Right.
But you know where I'm going with this? Harry Carey. When people...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
They think of Will Ferrell. All right, everybody. You know that.
I mean, there's some other people that like the imitation, the impersonation of them in general, just has superseded the actual person.
Yeah.
Like I know I've heard some people say like, "Oh, this person never said that."
Yeah, it's true.
It's integral to the impersonation.
Exactly, exactly. Like catchphrases that the person never said. Like, oh, I can give you another example, an SNL example, Esmeralda. Dana Carvey doing the original George Bush, the father. He never said, not gonna do that. You know, he never said that.
Yeah.
Never said it, and yet that was a catchphrase. Not gonna do that. You know, that whole thing. Because it was so, you know, memorable the weird way in which Dana Carvey, you know, did that impression. So sometimes the impression is actually better than the actual person. So
right.
Yeah. But anyway, Justin Bieber, as we continue with celebrities that everyone hates. So we will continue to cover this important topic. But you don't hate Bieber, do you? I mean, I find him annoying, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, I don't, again, don't really think about him.
Yeah. Especially now. Maybe like, you know, like whatever, 15 years ago when it was like, when he was, you know, in that moment, it was like, oh, this kid's a fucking, he's annoying.
He's never bothered me.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I've ever wasted any brain power.
Yeah.
Not liking him.
Well, he made Canadian hockey fans mad and you don't want to do that because then that way, you know, you can't get any Molson, you know, mm-hmm. like you won't mm-hmm. be able to, you won't be able to ice fish ever, you know.
Right.
All right. All right. Snack time. You ready for some snack time?
Mm-hmm.
Universal Yums is a great company that Deanna, our faithful subscriber / listener, signed Esmeralda and I up for a monthly box of snacks, both savory and sweet, from a different part of the world every month. And this month it's Ukraine with a fantastic activity booklet that's very colorful and filled with facts and pictures and all kinds of cool stuff you can do with your kids and trivia and stuff. And it's got two giant frogs, among other things. It's got two giant frogs on the front cover of the Ukraine, so I like it. But what are we trying in part of this? They give us a yum bag, which is separate from some of the other ones, and there's candy inside it. So what are we trying today, Esmeralda?
We're trying chewing sweets.
That's the name.
It's literal. I mean, yeah, it's just, it feels like Laffy Taffy, mm-hmm. but apparently it's a chewy candy that tastes like bubblegum.
Well, how would you describe the package? Like, it seems to be in a nether world, a very colorful nether world, and then the dude on it seems very either upset or crazy or scared.
Right. I'm concerned for his teeth. He's just like a furry ball with eyes and a big giant mouth with teeth going all around, which doesn't seem too cute. Seems more frightening than anything, but
right,
you know.
Right. And he's hairy too, like all hairy, and he's got little, does he have hands? Where are his hands?
He has hands.
I was going to say, I see his little legs at the bottom, but I don't see.
And, yeah, I don't think he has hands.
He doesn't have hands. No wonder he's screaming. You know?
Right.
And we have different flavors, and there are different colors, and each guy has a different color. Like, he's green on one, he's blue on another. So maybe they're relatives, but in this particular species of crazy, hairy, teeth-laden characters, they don't have arms or hands, but they have very skinny legs, and they scream.
Right.
So,
or they want food.
Oh, yeah, or they're like, I want a chewing sweet. Give me a chewing sweet. All right.
Maybe.
It says here, the description is, and this is part of the Yum bag, which is separate from the other packages, soft candy with a bubblegum flavor. Bubblegum candy probably isn't what you would expect when you think of Ukrainian sweets. You can read more about how this Yum came to be on the first page of this booklet. So they have a whole reason of why the bubblegum flavored candy is a thing. So, but it's a big thing, and you would think, wow, that's a little, you know, when I think of Ukraine, I don't think bubblegum candy right away. That's the first thing I think.
Right.
But so, okay, let's see what's going on here with this. It's a bubblegum flavored candy with a screaming, armless, furry dude with a lot of teeth yelling.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens when we taste this. All right.
So it's, yeah, it's like Laffy Taffy.
Oh, it is.
Texture.
Yeah. That's oh yeah, it is. Okay, we ready to try this?
Or styrofoam or something.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't like that it tastes like bubblegum.
It does. It tastes exactly like bubblegum, but it's not bubblegum.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's weird. It's weird because it kind of has a consistency of styrofoam, but not taffy. Like, it fools you into thinking, you know, because taffy is like you got to twist it.
Yeah.
And it's much harder to chew, and it's much chewier than this. Hmm. I don't know. It's weird.
It's fine, but I don't like that it tastes like bubblegum because my brain thinks, oh, you just have to chew this.
Right.
But then it dissolves because it's just candy.
Right. Yeah, it's weird because it does fool your brain. That's why I sometimes have like weird reactions to Jelly Bellies.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they taste like something else, it's like, wait a minute. But it's the consistency of a jelly. Like the buttered popcorn one always kind of freaks me out. Because it tastes exactly like buttered popcorn, only it's got the consistency of a jelly bean. So I'm like, ugh. It's weird. Mm-hmm. So it does. It makes your mind, it makes your brain go, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah. I'm weird.
So it doesn't matter.
You know what? I'm honestly not a big fan of bubblegum flavor if it isn't gum. Like, you know, there's toothpaste for kids and stuff like that. I'm like,
right.
I just don't understand it. I don't want things to taste like bubblegum, and it's not bubblegum.
I gotcha. And this tastes like
bubblegum.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I want some bubblegum now.
Right, right. And this is clearly, you know, I mean, it's bubblegum, you got it, and it's going to be in your mouth for a while. And, well, God, thank God we don't
you're
do some, thank God we don't do straight out of context anymore, because that would have been right there. But yeah, you chew it, it's in your mouth for a while, but this is like, oh, it's gum, and then it's bleh, it's gone. So,
right, it is dissolved.
So no wonder, now we know why the guy's screaming. He's like, I thought this was gum! That's what he's saying.
Right, it dissolved, and he's just like, where did it go? I would be scared, too. He doesn't know.
He has no idea what's going on. I thought it was gum! Because I think he's in the middle of saying gum. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, we discovered what happened. So that's kind of a no. You know,
I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like, it is literally a chewy thing that tastes like bubblegum. Correct.
It's not, right. Only it's not bubblegum.
It is spot on, yes.
It's also not taffy. So it fools us twice. Because you look at it, you go, oh, this is going to be like the consistency of taffy. And then you twist it and go, oh, no, this is soft. And then it's also not gum. So I don't know what this is. This is an abomination. That's why this guy's screaming. So.
Yeah.
All right. Not so good. We thought that the bread chips.
Those are great.
Those were really tasty. Those are very, very tasty. Would be good with like fried rye chips. They'd be good with beer, good with soup or something. So those were very tasty. And they had like a garlicky, you know, paprika kind of a flavor to them. Those were good. But the chewing sweets, there's a reason why there's a furry man screaming on them. That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll try a new snack and tell you more about it directly from Ukraine. And you always check out Universal Yums for that. All right, Esmeralda, you rule. Thanks very much. That was fun.
Oh, thank you.
And my thanks to Dan Feinberg for joining me to talk TV, as he does every couple of weeks. And another regular set of guests coming up on Friday with Eric Childress and Steve Procopi. We got a bunch of new movies to talk about, including the new Godzilla King Kong movie, Esmeralda. I bet you're excited about that one.
Oh, boy. Those are always good, though. Like, the verses.
Yeah. I'll just tell you this. It's definitely worth seeing. I've seen it, and it's definitely worth seeing. I'm not allowed to really talk about it and fully review it. But especially, see, here's the thing, Esmeralda. I mean, obviously you know this because it's a Godzilla, you know, King Kong movie. See it on the loudest, biggest screen possible.
Right.
That's the way to do it. So if you're going to go, you know, if you're going to do it right, as George Michaels used to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
George Michael said. All right. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. You want to be a sponsor and advertise on the podcast, you should do that. Check us out at sales@radiomisfits.com. Drop us a line. Speaking of dropping us a line, we have an email system that's open. We want to hear from you. Any contributions or questions, if you have a magic megaphone request, nickdpodcast@gmail.com. We have a voicemail system that's up 24/7 anytime you want to call us at 773-417-6948. Take the time to share, rate, and review us on every platform. Jason Skaggs does all the music and the sound and all that cool stuff, and Ed Silla is the boss at Radio Misfits. So check out radiomisfits.com. And we'll see you next time. Esmeralda, thank you. You rule.
Thank you.
We will see you next time on the Nick D Podcast.